Good morning, Christ Temple North. How we doing? I'm doing pretty good. I'm so thankful to be back in this building. I mean, we miss a week, and it feels like it's forever since I've seen you guys. I'm so thankful for the crews that clean up the roads and the parking lot and the stairs and everything else that we can you know, it's a huge blessing for them to serve in their capacity so that way we can have this. And so I'm also not a big fan of snow. So anytime it snows, like January is kind of cool. If we get this in February, I'm over it. I'm done. I'm looking forward to spring. How do we get there as fast as possible? But this is okay. And I had a unique holidays, right? It's middle of cold and flu season, and it really hit my family pretty hard. And so my sister had to go to the hospital on Christmas Day, and a couple times after that, as she battled COVID and the flu. So I encourage you guys to take care of yourself as much as possible. But because of that, we had to postpone a lot of our holiday celebrations. And which was nice because we got to be at home, you know, myself, Victoria, and baby Micah as he experienced his first Christmas and New Year's. And it's always interesting. I'm glad you guys were doing the 2025 vision boards yesterday. But as I was sitting there on New Year's Day, oftentimes before I can set goals, I got to look back. I got to reflect on where I'm at. I got to take inventory, as Pastor would say, to see where I'm at, how I got here, and then now do I need to course correct or keep going on the path I'm currently on? And so for me, it's been a lot of reflection, and this is kind of what this sermon is going to be about, is some of that reflection I had. And the most overwhelming thing, I had a major life changes in 2024, right? I was in a hotel in Orlando, Florida, with my brother and my brother-in-law and sister in the room. We were on the phone about to go to Universal Studios. I'm thinking I'm about to ride the Hulk roller coaster, okay? I'm set. I'm like, in an hour, I'm going to be riding the Hulk roller coaster. I love roller coasters. I love the thrill of them. I'm going to be fired up. I was fired up for it. I'm not going to lie. But my ultra-prepared wife was like, I should probably just take a test before I go on a roller coaster. And in my mind, we weren't in that realm of possibility, okay? I'm about to ride the roller coaster. My brother-in-law is using his military discount to get us a discount deal on Universal Studios. I'm ready to go. We're literally like lining this thing up. He is on the phone with the customer rep. I'm right here, Trevor, I need you. And in a way that you know something's up. And to sit there and experience that type of news with my sister and brother-in-law, who I would consider part of my inner circle. Now, it's not how I envisioned it, but it was a very special moment. And so instead of going to Universal Studios that day, we went to the beach instead and hung out on the beach. And I think it was such cloudy and foggy, like my mind was elsewhere. I was on the beach, but I wasn't on the beach, if you know what I'm saying. my life had just turned upside down, not in a good way. Fast forward and making the baby preparations and all and so forth, and you realize how fortunate you are to have such a great crowd of people in your life that just overwhelmingly blessed us. It really touches my heart how many of my friends, how many of my family, how many of you guys showed up and showed out for Micah as we made those preparations. I can't thank you guys enough. It really means a lot. I'm so thankful for that. And then, obviously, he comes in November, and through that, like, we just started cooking this week, right? You guys have blessed us with meal trains and food and gift cards and DoorDash and everything else. Like, I'm so thankful that you guys have blessed us continuously throughout this process. And people often ask me, what is the secret to enduring faith? And I would say, and they're oftentimes looking for some like theological way, or spiritual discipline they can adopt so they can have faith that will last them a lifetime. And I'm all for theological truth and spiritual truth. But if there's a secret ingredient to enduring faith, it is this. Your friends are the future you. Those closest to you oftentimes will determine the direction of your life. And some of the bad advice that, especially at a younger age, that you may get is, I can't turn my back on my friends. Or, I'm a ride or die. I'm a ride or die chick. I'm a ride or die guy, right? We bad boys for life, right? Like, you think you Will Smith over here. I'm a ride or die. Can't leave my friends behind. And the Bible has a lot to say about this. And I know this was originally geared for last week to kind of teach some of the young men and women in my class and teenagers. And it's a pivotal moment because, you know, throughout their stages of life, you can go from elementary to middle school, you have to readjust your friends, right? Your friends might go different ways. The jump from middle school to high school is even more violent, right? It's like, oh gosh, what path am I going to go on? Let me tell you, the jump from high school to college is the same way. College to adult life is the exact same way. You're constantly going to have to do these tweaks. And the Bible has a lot to say about who you choose to be your friends. 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character." Paul is much older than me, much wiser than me, and he has probably seen thousands of examples throughout his life of people that were on this certain path, got around the wrong crowd, and it corrupted their character. He's warning us that the lie you tell yourself of being able to hang around those who don't have the same morals as you, that it won't wear off on me. It won't affect me. I can still do the things I used to do. And Paul is saying, no, you cannot. You simply can't. And the reason why is because your friends, oftentimes, especially if you're younger in your faith, are stronger than your convictions. You hang around the wrong crowd, there aren't enough sermons that Pastor Fields or I could do that will help you from being led astray. In fact, sociologists study this oftentimes. Studies and a lot of our testimonies will show that your first cigarette, first hit of weed, first drink of alcohol, first look at pornography, your first sports gambling bet, etc., that majority of the time for almost every addict started with someone that they will consider a friend. Their convictions, your friendship is much stronger than your convictions are. In fact, I look at a lot of teenagers, so I can look back at myself. When teenagers begin having sex, you can oftentimes determine by when their peers start having sex. I remember vividly in high school, on the basketball team, the football team, having these conversations in the locker room. And at that time, I was an experience. And so as a kid, I felt some insecurity about it. I wasn't a man like some of these other guys were, some of my teammates were, because I didn't have that experience. And even though I was coming to church, I wanted to fit in. My conviction started to change based off that. And so, boom, I start going down a certain path simply because what I would consider friends, they were experiencing things that I hadn't experienced. I kind of wanted to see what that was like. This is universal. You can laugh and look at high school kids and laugh and joke at them because they're young and dumb. But how many adults have gotten themselves into debt because they're trying to keep up with other people? You know, this is still a thing that you will continually battle throughout your life. And so when you're starting out in the Christian faith, you simply aren't strong enough to combat this. And that's why Paul says, do not be misled. Other versions of it says, do not deceive yourself. Bad company corrupts good character. Solomon, the wisest person who has ever walked this earth, has even more to say about this. Proverbs 13:20 reads, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. Solomon, the wisest person who's ever walked this earth, kings and queens would travel from far and wide and give him lavish gifts just to get a few drops of his wisdom that he can bestow upon them. He had all kinds of riches and success. He had extreme wealth. He brought Israel to a place where it still hasn't been to. Right? He had a ton of success. And what's interesting to me is that of any writer in the Bible, Solomon writes about the company you keep more than anything else. Walk with the wise and become wise. Walk with fools, be a companion of fools, and you will suffer harm. Fools can know right from wrong. They just don't care. They just don't care. Oh, I know what I should do. I'm going to do it anyways. I have friends who aren't alive because of this. I have teammates who aren't alive because of this. And it's interesting in mid-30s to have such a roster of people at my age that I can look at and say, that could have been avoided. That could have been avoided. That instance of you driving home drunk from a high school party, losing control of your vehicle, and you're speeding because you're trying to make it home before curfew, could have been avoided. That first time you thought it was fun to be the cool guy taking, you know, a hit of cocaine at a party led to a lifelong addiction problem. And you lost that battle. Could have been avoided. Oh, it hurts me to say that. And it's interesting because I was part of the group that became, you know, the first generation of social media. I was some of the first people to be on Facebook. And it's interesting, every once in a while, I'll see a friend post on that deceased friend's page talking about how much they miss them. And it shows up on my timeline, and the memories flood in with that person. And you're like, dang, I do miss them as well. But it could have been avoided. Right. You did not have to go down that route. And it hurts to say that. Young people, please hear me when I say this. You do not want to be that individual where we post on your Facebook page or your Instagram page talking about how bad we miss you. It's interesting to me. We see these people, especially in public space, who make these giant mistakes, and they're around so-called friends. I like stand-up comedy, and I've gone to a couple of Kevin Hart's shows. And he talked about a recent issue where he was around what he considered a group of friends, got caught up with a woman that he wasn't married to. And we all know who he's married to because they're very public on social media. But was partying with his friends, got caught up with a woman, did some stuff he shouldn't have, and one of his friends, who he thought was his a friend, decided to blackmail him with the video evidence of his infidelity. I mean, Kevin Hart's worth a couple $100 million. I know I can get something out of this because I have something that's going to embarrass him. That's a hard thing to do because on one hand, you shouldn't have made that mistake. Right. On the other hand, you had so many of your so-called friends, they're with you. They know you're married. Not one of them said, hey, man, this ain't the path we should go down. You're in risk of losing everything you have built up for. Your marriage, your relationship with your kids, your house, your career. You're in serious jeopardy here. This ain't worth it. But not a single one of them did. Why? Because they're fools. Sorry, Kevin, your friends are fools. Now, I know they're not, I don't know if they claim to be Christians, but I'm sure he had a lot to do in looking at in the mirror of who he just chose to be around after that incident. And he's talked about it in his stand-up comedies, how he had to manage that and with his marriage and everything else. That's a tough pill to swallow. Walk with the wise and become wise. Be a companion of fools, you simply will suffer harm. The next thing is your friends determine your future. 2 Timothy 2:22 writes, or Paul writes, flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Let me ask you, who are your five closest friends? Some names pop in your mind? Some people you know you can trust? Will they be there for you when you need them, when there's nothing out for them to have? Is it a transactional relationship, or is it a true friendship? Sociologists have studied and believe that your five closest friends or people in your life determine the life you live. If your five closest friends are typically on welfare, that's the life you will live. If one or two of them escalate up to middle class, sometimes they'll pull the others up. Or not. And vice versa. Who are your five closest friends oftentimes determines the life you live. Are they the type of people to push you? Are they ones that will celebrate successes with you? Cheerlead you to make better decisions? Or are the ones that will be like, you don't need to go to the gym. I mean, it's January 1st. You know all those newbies. Don't be one of those newbies that go try to just change their physical health for the better. You don't need to do that. Come out and have a Cheesecake Factory with me. Are you dating someone right now? Who are their five closest friends? If you think their friends are idiots, they have a ton of stories that they went and get together about how stupid stuff they've done together. Do you think that's magically going to change because you're in the picture? They're still idiots. Does she have a lot of promiscuous friends? Why are they friends in the first place? They probably have a lot of shared character traits that they like in each other. You think that's going to change because you're in the picture? I learned that the hard way, fellas. Don't learn that lesson if you don't have to. Trevor, are you saying I need to change my friends? Yes. If you don't feel good about the five friends that you've been thinking about, then the answer is yes. Yes, you need to change your friends. Hate to be the person of bad news for you, but maybe 2025 needs to be a year of you changing your inner circle. Put that on your vision board if you need to. Because the thing that has saved me a lot of pain throughout the years is because of the group of friends and people that I've been able to have in my inner circle. God's protection and provision for my life has oftentimes come through the power of relationship. I have a brother in Christ in the back right there, Kirsten. We have 25 years of friendship. We have 25 years of inside jokes. I can look at him and tell him something's wrong with him. Something's on his mind. He's struggling with something. And he can do the same for me. In fact, one of my favorite moments in 2024 was the moment I told him of the results of our pregnancy test. His reaction was priceless. It warms my heart that he is my biggest cheerleader outside of my mom. Mom's always going to be the biggest cheerleader. He'll take a second place. But there are many times that God's protection has allowed Kirsten to tell me, hey, Trevor, this party's getting kind of wild. I'm not comfortable with this. And we've left. And by the time we've hit the highway, something happened. Cops show up, guns show up, fights break out, things happen. I thank for God. I thank God for Kirsten in my life, because that protection and the power relationship has clearly influenced and saved me from so many different occasions. Thank you. Yeah, it's fun. And yes, Kirsten, you can still call yourself uncle. Proverbs 12:26 says, the righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. Solomon again saying, hey, choose your friends carefully. The relationships that you have are forged by choice. Solomon simply telling us, choose carefully. And this verse can hang some people up. Aren't I supposed to be the light of the world? Aren't I supposed to do all these things? Jesus hung out with sinners. Aren't I supposed to do that as well? Are you Jesus? There's this tension in Scripture. Be the light of the world. Choose your friends carefully. Be a game changer for everyone. Be a life changer. Show everyone to Christ. Protect yourself. If your roots aren't deep enough in the ground, you're going to be swayed. It's just, your house is made of cardboard at this moment. It's interesting. Like, we see the fires in L.A., you see, a lot of these trees are still standing. Their roots are deep down. But all these multi-million dollar homes and them, they went up in flames like that. There's this one picture that stood out to me. There's painting the coastline of Malibu. Right? House, multi-million dollar houses. Some of the most expensive real estate in the world. In Malibu, all burnt down. But there was this one house that was standing. The white one, you saw this. And the reason why is because it wasn't made of wood and timber. It was made of concrete and stone. And it stood the fires that wiped out everything else around them. But if you aren't made of that concrete quite yet, if you ain't been tried and tested in this Christian faith, choose your friends carefully. Even healthy trees need to get pruned from time to time so they continue to be healthy. I have a giant tree in my front yard, and God, is it expensive to have someone come out and do that. Oh, man. But if I want to keep that tree, I got to cut the dead stuff off so they continue to grow, thrive, and not topple my house. Because if it does, I mean, if it falls over, like my whole house is probably gone, right? It's like, and hopefully I'm not in it at that time. Um, What you need to understand is, yes, we can be so-called friends to the world, and we're called to do so, but your inner core of people better have the same moral Christian values as you. That tight core that you have, the ones that you're in a bind that you can call up, that's your tight core. The ones that will be there when you're sick, that's your core. The ones that will celebrate you in big life events, that's your core. And then you broaden that scope out just a little bit. I say community or influence. Those also should be Christ followers, right? This is why coming to church is so important, so you can be influenced by other believers, right? How many, there's a lot of men that have influenced my life in this church. As I look around, I can just, yep. Like, there's a lot of men that have influenced my life positively. Now, they might not be my inner core, but they were at my wedding. They might not be standing next to me while I take my vows, but they were at my wedding, and I won them at my wedding to showcase and share that moment with them because of how much they've influenced me, got me to the point where I can say these vows. But every single one of them were Christian followers. And then, obviously, you care for the people out in the outside world. You can show love to them. You can care for them. Show them a proper way of doing things, a different way of doing things. But you keep them at arm's length. They don't really affect you, but you still care for them. A lot of you still have family members in that care zone. You care for them, but they're not part of your inner circle. And the perfect example of this in the Bible, if you want to study what friendship looks like, there is no better example, in my opinion, than David and Jonathan in the Bible. First and Second Samuel, if you want to look at friendship, go through First and Second Samuel. You will see the relationship of Jonathan and David that I'm kind of jealous of. First Samuel 18:1 says, after David had finished talking with Saul, this is right after he killed Goliath, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. A couple of verses later, and Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan, Saul's son, in many eyes, will probably be the next person in line for the kingdom. However, God chose David to be that. And instead of getting jealous and having this bitter rivalry with David, Jonathan fully accepts him as his own, like a brother. They make a covenant with each other. And that bond and relationship ran deep. Both of them shared this warrior spirit. They were both very successful in the battlefields. But they also probably appreciated that David was a musician and poet at night. He probably loved him for the warrior, the spirit kinship they had on the battlefield, but they probably appreciated their differences in other areas, and they celebrated that with each other. And only a true friend can make this statement: you will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Jonathan, who in many eyes was saying, I should be next in line, and probably had a legitimate claim to the king, to the throne, as most kingdoms are. It's like, no, I'm going to submit to God, God's will. I'm just going to be in line with you. I'm going to help be the second person. I'm going to be your right-hand man to get you in a position you need to be successful. Why? Because I've been with my father all these years. I know how a king moves. I know how a king thinks. I know the things that you're going to be facing. I'm going to help you prepare you so that you can step into a place that you're destined to be in. And even when my father gets jealous of you, David, I'm going to commit treason and let you escape. I'm going to give you multiple warnings about the movements of my father so you can still be alive. And then 1 Samuel 23:16, when he's going through trials and tribulations, it says, "And Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. And when you need me, I will be there for you. But most importantly, I'm going to point you to the source of strength. I'm going to point you back to him every single time." That is what true friendship is. And I encourage you guys to look at their relationship. When Jonathan dies, David writes, I mean, he's just heartbroken. This is best friend. This is guy's inner core. This is best man. When he dies, he's just broken. To the point, he's like, he made that covenant, and he takes care of Jonathan's crippled son. He sits at the table with him at all the king's dinners and stuff like that. Like, he looked after his son till his dying day. That was a true friendship. And I hope that you guys have something like that. I pray that you can be something like that to someone else. I can't leave my friends behind. If your friends aren't believers and you're still accepting what they do, you are leaving them behind by showing them a watered-down Christianity. A Christianity doesn't change anything in your life. You're showing them that this faith thing isn't real. If you accept Jesus Christ in your personal Lord, your Savior, and you don't start changing your attitudes, your habits, your thoughts and stuff like that, you're showing them a watered-down Christianity. No reason why they're not jumping on the board, because they don't see change in your life. Why would they need a change? You're still doing the same stupid things that we're doing for the last 20 years, right? You're still getting drunk and stuff, hanging out and doing stupid stuff and getting thrown out of bars the same way we did when we were 18, 20 years old. Why would that? Why I need to step into your realm when you're still doing the same things I'm doing? If you were in a plane crash and you're the only one that can move, you wouldn't just say, "Oh, I can't leave my friends behind." No. You would go get them help and come back so they can be rescued. Your responsibility isn't to stay there and say, "Well, I know you can't move and you're bleeding out. Everything in your life looks like to be a mess and you're just bleeding out. And I know I can go get help. I know where the source of help is, but I can't leave you behind because I'm going to stay here with you." Thank you, young man. Yes, I agree. That seems stupid, right? But so many of us are doing that. Well, we aren't pointing them to Jesus Christ. We're just going to sit there with them and accept what the path they're on, knowing that there is a better way. Life is hard. Make it easier by choosing the right people around you. That is, thank you, Pastor. Don't make it hard. Don't make life harder by choosing the wrong people. There's a lot of people that chose the wrong spouse. Don't make your life harder. There's a lot of people that have the wrong friend group, making your life harder. If 2025 will show you anything, some of you need to leave your friends behind so you can go get them the help that they need. Some of you are desperate for a friend. You've been yearning for someone to be there for you. And I understand that pain. But John 15, 13 says, "Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command." There is a friend that's closer than anything that you will ever experience here on this physical earth. There's a friend that will be there, that has been there, and will continue to be there till the end of time. And if you don't know him, his arms are wide open. It is the best relationship you can ever invest in. And if you are in desperate need of that friend to be there for you, to be the counsel that you need, to be your cheerleader, to be the one that's there to answer your prayers. Do not leave here today without making that introduction. Me and Kirsten's friendship started at a lunch table 25 years ago. At a funny encounter, I'll share it for another day. But because of that encounter, it started a lifelong friendship. Don't leave here today without having a godly encounter that will start an eternity relationship that will never, ever let you down. We thank you. Hopefully, this weather holds out. We can continue to do this more so than that. But for those that are watching online, continue to stay warm, continue to protect yourself. Take care of yourself health-wise, right? And start 2025 off right. Thank you.